I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. If this was a normal week with a normal episode and normal news, I'd probably be talking right now about how Tyler McGill made the Mets rotation and they just signed JD Martinez last night, and isn't that great for Mets and Mets fans and everything like that. Maybe I'd be going into the other baseball news, Blake Snell signing a contract. Jackson Holliday just got reassigned to minor league camp. All of the great Wyatt Langford making the opening day roster for the Rangers. Just any big news you could think of that would be worthy of discussion. And then Wednesday night, in the middle of what was seeming like a very normal week, and I'm recording this Friday, March 22nd, at 2:11 p.m. So just so you understand exactly what time this is happening, because also there's a non-zero chance that between the time that this comes out and hits your phone or your Spotify or whatever, that between now and then, that something else comes out about the story that I feel like will probably end up being the biggest story in sports this year. Definitely, almost certainly in baseball. And that is enough beating around the bush for a minute and a half. Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, was fired on Wednesday by the Dodgers after Shohei Ohtani and his team alleged, quote, massive theft, $4.5 million stolen from him to cover gambling debts with an illegal bookie in California. Betting on sports, we don't know. There's a lot of things we don't know. We don't know what's true and what's not, because the original story that ESPN had clearly been researching for a little bit, and they had an interview with Ipe, was that Ohtani helped him. That Ipe went to Ohtani and said, you know, I'm in too deep, pal. I need help. And Ohtani was like, bet, I'll cover you. And wired $4.5 million in various transfers to the Boogie. The thing is with that story is that if that's the truth, which again, we have no idea what the actual truth is here because the stories keep changing. If that's true, I'm pretty sure that is a violation of some part of the CBA, and I am very sure that that is illegal. You know, that's whatever they're going to call that, wire fraud or money laundering or whatever. And the thing is that because Ohtani and his people have lied already, right off the bat, within an hour of the story breaking. I mean, because I was in, we were about to leave the house to go somewhere at whatever time this broke, 5:45 or whatever. Between the point and when we were in the car on our way, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, within an hour, the story changed. Because the original story and the new story are so different that now everyone is left to ask themselves, what is true? Where is the truth in this situation? Ipe said that he wasn't betting on baseball, allegedly. But again, we don't know what's true and what isn't. He said he was betting on the NBA and NFL and whatever other sports, but I don't think it's inconceivable to say, you know, if we're trying to posit what, you know, else they could be lying about, I don't think it's inconceivable that a guy who is deeply entrenched in Major League Baseball, who probably has some amount of inside knowledge due to his level of proximity to a team, to the face of baseball, that he understands certain things about the sport and the teams that, you know, the regular person wouldn't know, and that he bet on baseball. I don't think that's inconceivable. We don't know that yet. There hasn't been an allegation of that yet, but it's really bizarre. This is, if you had asked me, and I think the other issue here is that Ohtani, with the contract that he signed or whatever and the way his free agency played out, garnered a little bit of heat for that. I think that there's a little bit now less, I think people still recognize that Ohtani is the face of the game. He's the best player in baseball, but I think there's a little bit more of an askance look on him just because that contract seems so unnecessarily designed in a way to help the team out. The team that already was spending hundreds of millions of dollars that didn't need the help. And I think the issue here too is that if The two major views of this, right? Like, there are two possibilities here of who this could actually be, right? If this is actually Ipe's issue, this is exactly what it would look like, right? This is, and it would make total sense that either, we'll assume that the massive theft stuff is a lie, right? Like, that was probably just someone went to, some lawyer who's involved with Ohtani went to him and said that you should not have said that. That is illegal. What you did was illegal. If that's the truth, this is what it would look like, right? Buddy helping out his, you know, this guy he regards as a brother. We've heard that so much. They're like brothers. This is what it would be, right? But if this was, and I don't think this is inconceivable that this could also be what this is. If this was Ohtani's issue, this is also what it would look like. Do you think that Shohei Ohtani himself would go to an illegal bookie? Or would he send Ipe, who is his, essentially, he's like a brother to him. He's his translator. He's also something of a personal assistant. He goes to the store for him, runs, you know, does stuff that he needs him to do. This would also be what that would look like, probably. And the way that this was uncovered originally, which is why ESPN has been working on the story, is this was part of a ring run by, I believe the head guy of like the actual ring is Wayne Nix, is his name, N-I-X. And then the guy that they busted with Ipe was Matthew Bowyer, something like that. When they found that out, this was in connection with a ring that was allowing athletes, a professional athlete's gambling ring, right? Like, because they were using this as a bookmaker. And it's very suspect, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think people will be less willing to give Ohtani the benefit of the doubt the further we go along, and the more it seems like there's a bunch of lies here. I mean, the other issue for me with this, at least, is the people who are saying, well, Ohtani would never, right? Like, because he's such a nice guy. Like, people are almost infantilizing Ohtani. Oh, he doesn't even speak English. He's just a saint. He's a wonderful person. We do not know Shohei Ohtani. You and I don't know him. He is a man who has, through his own design, made it so that no one knows anything about him. Like, this is the thing with Ohtani. Part of his joining a team was he didn't want any of the news about it to leak before it happened. He didn't want to be forced to talk to the media, anything like that. We didn't know anything about him. Randomly, a week ago, he went, oh yeah, by the way, I'm married, right? Like, this is who we're talking about here. And the people were like, well, you know, his teammates have said he's just so focused on the game and he wouldn't know anything else about another sport. A degenerate, like, if you're a gambling addict, that does not matter if you know the sport or not. I mean, how many people bet on horse races based on a name or bet on whatever minor Division III women's basketball? There's degenerate gamblers betting on that, even though, like, most people wouldn't be able to toss out a name or a player or something like that. And the other thing is that he's also married to a women's basketball player, former women's basketball player, so he can erase the fact that he wouldn't know anything about any other sport anyway. He knows English. Like, this is the other thing that's not, like, you know, his people were like, oh, well, they were still counting on Ipe to translate for him, and that's how some of this happened. Shohei Ohtani has done interviews in English. He has accepted awards in English. He has lived in America for 7 years. And I'm not even saying, like, well, you come to America, you gotta learn English. But, like, if you're in a country where all of your teammates, all of the people, most of the people around you, anything like that, if there is a language that most people are talking, you're going to at least pick up on it a little bit, right? It's such a weird story. Like, it's just, I never could have guessed this. And the league has come out and said that as of yet, they're not investigating Ohtani, which feels odd to me because this is really close to the sport, right? And I get that they don't want to suspend the face of the game, but if he's doing, like, this is really bad. Like, this, and if it's Ohtani, that's really bad. Like, this is a bannable offense is the other thing. If he's betting on games that he's not, like, this is the thing. If he's betting on baseball games, if this is Ipe too, because this counts for, I think, any employee, a game that you're not a part of. So if Ipe was betting on, like, Red Sox and Oriole game, that's a one-year ban. If you're betting on a game you're involved in, so the last year, the Angels or the Dodgers or whatever this year, if you're betting on that, that is a permanent ban. And we saw that with Pete Rose. And the league did a little bit of the same thing with Pete Rose, where they kind of covered up for years how bad of an addiction he had. But, like, this is really, really bad. And the other weird thing that just came out today was Ipe apparently has been lying about having worked for the Red Sox a number of years ago, which is really weird to me. But, yeah, this is, if Ohtani went out like Pete Rose, that would be insane. I don't know how you would even describe that, even consider that, but it's a non-zero chance, right? Like, there's a better chance of it happening than there was a week ago, right? Because it was zero, it's not, you know, it's possible. This is all possible now. And I think the part that's driving me the most insane is that we don't have all the information, and we probably won't for a while. And this is definitely not going to be the last we hear about this, because now this is going to go through, the IRS is going to get involved, and this is going to take some time. And I have no idea where this is going to go next, but this is, potentially one of the biggest scandals that the sport has had in years. And I hope that he didn't do it, because I think it's better for baseball if Shohei Ohtani's playing it. But, like, this is bad in, like, a multitude of ways. So, yeah, this has been a wild week, and I'm sure that over the course of the next few months or whatever, I'll be discussing this further. But why don't we take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Next Benedict and everything surrounding that whole disaster.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. And we're back. So last week, I did a short little tribute at the end of my Oscar segment to Next Benedict. This week, I wanted to return to that because, I think it's everything happened so fast. And with such like a shroud over it that I just decided I would capture as much info and put it all together in one place. I think that's helpful to have. And also, I just want to talk about like the culture that we're sort of breeding now and how dangerous it is, which I'm sure I don't have to tell you that. But so Next Benedict was a trans non-binary teen who was attacked in the girls' restroom at his Oklahoma State High School. And he was forced to use the girls' bathroom due to Oklahoma state bathroom laws. And then he died the next day. He had been bullied for a year prior to his death. And I think in a case like this, you can point directly to the culture and the legislation that Oklahoma had been purveying and creating. They're one of the largest creators of implementers on a state level of anti-LGBTQ legislation. Some of the stuff that Oklahoma's doing, the children can't receive gender-affirming healthcare, which, as we've said before on the show, is not, surgeries and hormones. It's puberty blockers, and I'm pretty sure they consider, like, therapy related to it to be healthcare, too, which is wild. They're forced to use the bathroom that aligns with the gender that they were assigned at birth. They're not allowed to have non-binary gender markers on their birth certificates. There's legislation currently under consideration for this year that would want to define gender as a, quote, immutable biological trait. They have legislation to ban changing sex on your birth certificate, and that would force teachers to use names and pronouns based on birth certificates. And even the craziest part of this is that the Oklahoma Superintendent for Public Instruction appointed Chaya Rachik, who is known infamously for libs of TikTok, to the Department of State's Department of Education's Media Advisory Committee. So when you hear all that, you get a sense of the culture that has been created and that would surround Next, right? Like, imagine living in that situation. Next was beat up and in an altercation in the restroom where they came at him. Next defended himself, threw water on them, tried to fight back. They overpowered him because there were three of them. And then he was suspended for 2 weeks, and Next required a trip to the emergency room after this. But Next was attacked, and he was suspended for 2 weeks. And the one of the cops, the cops come to the emergency room to talk about the altercation, told Next that due to the water attack, it seemed like mutual antagonism to him, and that Next might actually face charges from the girls. The next day, Next was getting ready with his adoptive mother, who's his biological grandmother, and he collapsed on the floor of their living room and died. The Oklahoma Medical Examiner ruled it a suicide due to combined toxicity from Prozac and Benadryl. Nex's family didn't dispute the findings, but put out a statement to note several things left out of it, because it was an initial summary. The actual autopsy report, I guess it would be, is going to be released next week on Wednesday, the 27th. But the Nex's family did want to note that several things were left out of the initial summary, that there were several findings of physical trauma, some of them pretty severe. And I guess what I want to say in this situation is, when you hear all of this information, there's a clear reason why this child committed suicide. This wasn't just a child dealing with depression or a child being bullied. Next was 16 and living in a state, in a society, that basically told him that they didn't want him to be that way, to be himself, and that they would rather eradicate people like him than learn to love him. Shouldn't even have to learn to love people, but you know what I'm saying. And he, despite, by all accounts, having friends, feeling very beloved and respected by his family, who are attempting to use the right pronouns for him. I mean, he went by he, him, they, them. His friends said that he preferred he, him, but his family respected the they, them. They were learning. They spoke about this, respected, chosen name and everything like that. That despite all of this, Next felt that there wasn't a way out other than suicide. And I mean, you can't point to one exact thing, but I'm sure that the idea of, wow, I'm going to get called to court over this, I'm going to get charged for this or whatever, sued or whatever. And in the state of Oklahoma, like, what hope is there for me at that point? And I think what I want to emphasize here is that in this situation, it is not just one person who failed him. It was everyone. It was the girls who attacked him, the students at his high school who bullied him, the police officer diminishing what happened, the public education system in the state deeming him unworthy of basic human dignities, and a media culture filled with people who strip him and people like him of their humanity every single day just for existing in such a way that they don't deem as normal, that they deem as wrong. And no, Chaya Rachik came out after people were like, yeah, this kind of seems like a murder, in a way. And Chaya Rachik came out and was like, no, it was a suicide. Everyone owes me an apology. And I think it is crass for her to victory lap after the suicide finding. Because this suicide, and many trans suicides like it, is a direct result of a culture that she has helped create, stoke, and foster these last few years in an attempt to win a culture war that no one will care about in a couple of decades. Right? Like, this is... there are people now who don't give a shit on both sides, like any political leaning. There are people who literally are like, why should I care? But because these people have warped to themselves that they have to win an online culture war. That, there's casualties in that. And I think it's ridiculous that children are dying because adults can't see the forest for the trees and are just trying to punch down on more vulnerable people than them. That they can't say to themselves, in what world is this actively hurting me? Because my other thing with this too is the whole, you know, Planet Fitness now. There's some sort of big stupid controversy where they're like, there's a man in the women's bathroom shaving. And it's clearly a trans woman. And you know what? A man who is willing to go into a women's bathroom to molest children or rape a woman isn't going to be like, well, I'll pretend to be a woman. And then if someone said, well, you can't because you're actually a man, they went, ah, shucks, now I'm not going to commit a crime. They're still going to commit a fucking crime, right? Regardless of what you think. This is just actively hurting people who all they want is to be able to live their life as the person that they are. And to drive people to the edge and beyond it should make people like Raychick, like J.K. Rowling, like every fucking politician who has taken this one issue in the last however many years and has ran with it, like every TERF and gender critical who has decided that their beliefs and anger should override the lives and well-being beings of people who are incredibly vulnerable already, you make every single one of them take a deep look inwards and see what it has actually done to make their lives better and the lives of the people that they are protecting better, instead of making everyone's lives, including theirs, worse and more bitter and angry and violent. This doesn't just hurt trans people. This hurts anyone, because what this does is, this is the stepping stone, right? This is the stepping stone that says that the next one is, well, if you don't dress the way that we think that women should dress, right? And then that's when that starts taking out people like me, you know, or some of you listening to this, that we don't fit into the box that has been created that says man pants, women dress. Like, if we let this continue, and the thing is that it's not like people aren't fighting this. People are fighting this. But the further that this goes, the further people who do not, it's not me. This is just going to hurt more and more people. We're slipping down a slippery slope that doesn't need to exist. Trans people have existed for hundreds of years, thousands of years. It's so depressing to see people just let this happen, and to see people decide that this is going to be the thing that they fight. I don't understand how you can look at a trans person and your first thought be, I'm in danger. My first thought is, oh, this is a person, right? We're all on this fucking planet together. We should really be concerned about bigger issues, right? Like, we should just be letting people live their lives. And instead, we have to tell kids, no, you can't be that way. But kids have felt like this for eons. You know, J.K. Rowling just did fucking Holocaust denial so that she could try and say that they weren't destroying books that talked about transgender people back in the 20s. No, like, you know, when you do stuff like this, you are siding with the Nazis, right? You're siding with fascism. To say that people can't do what they want. And it's always the people who cite small government, no government intervention, we should all be allowed to do what we want. That's the case for taxes, but not for my bathroom. It's so stupid. Right? Like, it's the same thing that it was stupid before Lawrence v. Texas, when they had to say, yeah, it's true for my taxes, but you can come into my home and arrest me for having consensual sex in my own house. It's terrifying for me. I cannot imagine the anxiety that Nex must have felt every single day. Every day. From eyes open to eyes shut, it's one of those things that really makes me think how brave trans people are. And they shouldn't have to be. You shouldn't have to be brave to be yourself. The same thing people say about gay people. You shouldn't have to be brave to be yourself. But there's an inherent level of bravery to look at someone in the eyes and say, I'm going to be who I am. And whatever you think of that is not going to stop me. And I think to do that for a minute, an hour, a day, any amount of time is bravery. I think Nex is incredibly brave to do that in an environment where everyone told them no. And it terrifies me what this situation is going to end up saying to other young trans and non-binary people. No one should commit suicide. No child should kill themselves. Child should die, right? This is what we talk about with the, you know, the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. They just bombed an orphanage. What are we doing here? Who are we? It makes me sick. We should be better than this. And I guess it's a learning opportunity to say we aren't. That we can't just sit there and say, well, we're better than that now, right? Because that's what happened with the Voting Rights Act. I just read the book Origin, which was making me think about a lot of stuff. But, like, they gutted. They let something lapse from the Voting Rights Act that basically was like, yeah, you can't commit discrimination anymore. Because they were like, well, we beat racism. We didn't. We have to keep fighting. We have to keep pushing forward. And we have to hold the line. Right? Like, I know that that's like a conservative saying. But I think we have to, you know, progressive people, left people who believe in the freedom to be yourself have to hold that line too. The freedom to live basic, not just basic human rights of food and water and shelter, but basic human dignities. Being able to go to the bathroom in peace. Being able to exist in peace. That just because it's somewhere else or it's someone else that isn't like me, that doesn't make you immune to this issue. In fact, it's more dangerous. Because once all the trans people are gone, or once all the Palestinians are gone, who's next? Right? Who's next? Because you let this create itself, and it's a snake eating its own tail. It's just going to go and go and go. It's just, it's sickening. And it's, I hope Next has found peace somewhere else. Somewhere better than the world we've created here. And I hope we create a world, we can create a world with more hope for young people. A world where they don't feel hopeless to be themselves. Anyway. Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, I will do my movie minute, as pointless as it seems after saying all of that.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. And we're back. It's my movie minute this week. I teased it last week. I don't think anyone is going to be surprised. Oh boy. I have the NCAA women's tournament on. South Carolina's beating the crap out of Presbyterian. Not that anyone expected anything else. I went last week. Last week? Early this week? I went and saw Love Lies Bleeding. The new Rose Glass picture with Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien and Ed Harris. And I had incredibly high expectations for this. And somehow, it surpassed every single one. I have no idea how it did it. It was there is a pretty decent chance that we get to December, or whenever I end up seeing all of the 2024 films that I intend to see. Usually that drifts into January and February of the following year. There's a very good chance that when we get to the end of this film year, that this is my favorite movie of the year. It's wild. It's crazy. It moves so well. It's surrealist, over the top. I'm the premier Kristen Stewart defender of the last decade and a half. I think this is her best performance. It's either one or two, right? Like, Spencer's right up there, but this is taking everything that Kristen Stewart does well as Kristen Stewart and putting it, you know, diluting it into one character. And funneling it into one character, diluting would be the opposite of that. But it's the little gasps and gulps and the way that she says a word. There's a point where she just goes, huh? And it is, I can't deliver it the way she does, because she is just outstanding at what she does. Katie O'Brien, revelation. I had never seen anything that she was in up until now, but she is incredible in it. There's also a discourse happening online. Some people have referred to Katie O'Brien's character as Butch. Now, Katie O'Brien in real life definitely skews more to the masculine side of things. Short, you know, you take a look at her, you're like, yeah, that's someone who's probably more aligned with Butch. I don't want to put a label on her that she doesn't, put on herself. But the character is not. The character is very feminine. The Butch one is Kristen Stewart. Little tiny. The way they play with size in this movie is very interesting, too. Ed Harris on a tear. Absolutely insane. Jenna Malone, James Franco, they're both great. And Anna Baryshnikov, who you may know from, I know her from Dickinson, which is an incredible show. I have to finish the last season, but the first two seasons are incredible. She's so good in it. Every turn it takes is crazy. And then there's a turn. The last 15 minutes of the movie are nuts. Like, I'm going to go see this movie again. I have to see it again. But the last 15 minutes of this movie are nuts. And there is something that happens in like the last 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, that literally I was like, okay, this movie has me. You have to get on this movie's level. You have to be ready for this movie to be somewhat surreal. Like, you know, Katie O'Brien's character, Jackie, deals with a lot of, like, she's doing steroids, so she has like these surreal steroid hallucinations is the word I'm looking for. And you have to sort of get on that level. The way that Kristen Stewart uses her eyes, her body, this is just, I will never be able to stop talking about how good she is in this movie. But yeah, it's crazy. Rose Glass is such a great director. If you haven't seen her first movie, I'm not making this the movie minute because I might actually come back to this movie at some point to talk about, but if you haven't seen St. Maud, I really recommend it. Really great movie. I liked St. Maud a lot. I think this is a clear step up. I think this really says something about her as a director. I will warn you, movie gets a little bit gory at times. Not too gory, but there is a bit where someone gets their head demolished on a table and you see a little bit of it afterwards. Like, they get cut to it a few times and you don't see a ton of it, but the way they move the head and then, like, I assume it's CGI. I have no idea how they would do it practically, although I'd love it if it was practical. The way they move the head and, like, the jaw, the half-demolished jaw sort of shifts around while they're trying to move stuff, and, like, the noise it makes, is like, that is gonna live in my brain until the day I die. The score is great. The soundtrack is incredible. This is set in the 80s, I believe. I believe 89. I believe that's when it takes place, or 90 or something like that. The costuming is really great. It feels sweaty. Like, you watch it and you feel the grime on it. Like, you're like, ugh, I want to take it like a little bit of a shower. You know, I want this movie to take a shower. It's tremendous. It's a neo-noir crime thriller. You have to expect going into it that it's going to be a little wacky. That it's going to be a little surreal, and that I think if you go into it with that and just know you're going to watch the kind of movie that typically doesn't get made about queer people, and that And I actually want to say this. I think it's great. I love the word queer. I think it's a great catch-all. This is distinctly a lesbian movie. Like, this is... When I was sitting there, I was watching it, the thought that kept coming to my mind over and over again was, like, I love being gay so much. Because this is the kind of shit that we come up with. Like, this is a genre that is typically, like most genres in Hollywood history, been pretty heterosexual. And then, with some exceptions, I think a more grounded take on this is probably Bound. Something like Bound in that same, like, noir-y thing, but that one's a little slicker. I love that one. I don't know that I've ever recommended it on the show. If I haven't, I will at some point. But yeah, this is a genre that historically, because this neo-noir becomes noir when you go back far enough, is typically, there's you know, more straight movies in noir. But yeah, this one's crazy. It's still in theaters, depending on where you live, how close you live to a metro area, it's probably showing it at more theaters. I live on Long Island in the suburbs. Most of the theaters around me this week have dropped down to one showtime a day at night. I kind of think this is the perfect nighttime movie. I'm probably going to go see it again this week. I really recommend you see this in the theater, because I think that the sound design, everything going on, it just, like most movies, are going to play better on the big screen. But this one, I think also it's important to show out for queer movies made by women. Yeah, I really recommend it. I also just want to say, because this movie also got a little bit of notoriety on opening night, because some guy committed a sex crime. Like, there's two later jokes. I don't know that I talked about this last week, because I don't know that it had come out yet, but that he had masturbated in the theater watching it. And A24's social media account turned this into marketing, which I know a lot of people found very funny and charming. I didn't. Because that's, it's one of those things where it's like, no matter, this is a gay movie, and no matter what we do, we're going to be now sexualized by men, right? Like, Kristen Stewart in that movie is not at all for men's eyes. But here we are, and it's so violating. It's like such a violating feeling. But, I mean, Katie O'Brien has taken it in stride. I would be pissed off if I was involved in the film. If that situation happened, but yeah, I don't particularly love that. It's a deeply horny movie, is my other thing. So if you go into it and you're like, wow, like, this is gonna be a lot of sex in this movie. I texted a friend right after seeing it, and I was like, you know, if you had told me but 2 weeks after Driveway Dolls that a movie would come out that would be hornier, gayer, and more chaotic than Driveway Dolls, I wouldn't believe you. And then it happened. I saw Dune 2 this week as well. And I'll probably talk about it at some point. I don't know that I'm going to make it my recommendation at any point soon, because I really loved it, but I also think it's very... I don't think it needs the recommendation, you know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like when I recommended Barbie however many months ago, like, didn't really need the recommendation. Everyone was seeing it anyway. Everyone's going to see Dune Part 2 anyway. It's going to get nominated for Best Picture. Probably talk about it next year. Dune Part 2 is my number 3 movie of the year, and I don't think it moves up past Driveway Dolls and Driveway Dykes, excuse me, and Love Lies Bleeding. I do recommend, if you can find both of them in theaters, double feature them. I think that would be really fun. I think a triple feature, like, in 4 months when Love Lies Bleeding and Driveway Dykes are on DVD, a triple feature with Bottoms, which still does not have a Blu-ray release, did not come out on physical media. Driveway Dykes has gotten an announcement for that, so it's going to happen at some point soon, next month or two or whatever. Love Lies Bleeding is an A24 film that's almost certainly going to go on physical media, if only through their website too, because I think Aftersun did that, and maybe Marcella Shell with Shoes On, they got physical releases through the A24 website, which I bought the Aftersun one because I, you know, need that. It's going to get put on physical. St. Maud got put on physical. But a triple feature of Bottoms, Driveway Dykes, and Love Lies Bleeding, I think, would be insane. And a good look at the inner workings of my mind, personally. Like, that's how I think. But yeah, I really love that. I think starting next week, now that we're kind of out of... We're in, like, a weird zone where there's not a ton of big new movies coming out. I'm going to start trying to recommend some older stuff, too, because I feel like it's been a while since I've done that. Not counting, like, the Christmas and noir stuff. But, like, yeah, I want to recommend some, like, deep-cut older movies for you guys. So, keep an eye out on that. Hopefully I'll get to it soon. Thank you for listening. If you like this show, obviously I recommend every show on the Home Run Apple Sauce Network. From Complex to Queens, A Pot of Their Own, Today Your Love, Tomorrow World Series, everything on that channel, fantastic. If you like that, I recommend you go to, you subscribe to our Patreon. If you go to Home Run, there's a link in the bio. I know there is now. I checked that last week. I know I mentioned it last week. I wasn't certain. I add that link to the bio, so I know how it works now. So you can either click that, or if you go to homerunapplesauce.com, there's a link there. It says Patreon. You click on that. Self-explanatory takes you to the Patreon. I believe it's $5 a month. $5 a month gets you exclusive episodes, monthly playlists, access to the Discord server, everything you would want. And the money comes right to us. So you're directly supporting us, which I think is pretty chill. I don't want to, you know, make you feel like you have to, but if you got an extra $5 a month to spare and you love the network, you love all the shows here, it could be fun. It could be a nice little thing you get. Get a little few extra perks. I have a few Patreon subscriptions of my own, and they pay off. I think it's nice. It's fun. You can follow the show on Twitter at FIBpod, on Instagram at FlushingIsBurningPod, and you can email us at FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. I'm starting a new thing on the Instagram page where, in addition to posting links for the shows in Apple Podcasts and Spotify, I'm also putting up a poster that has of the movie Minute that has the where you can find it. So if you don't want to be spoiled on what the movie Minute is, you see me post on social media, you can click through the first two slides. There'll be that. And then if there's three slides, don't go to the third one. Just swipe out of it. Just don't even look at it. You won't know. This week, probably not a surprise. Also, don't I usually say what the movie Minute is in the... Sometimes I do. If you don't want to be spoiled, don't read the preview either. But yeah. Third one, I'll have all the information on where you can find it. This one is going to be only in theaters currently. I might try and put up ones for old ones, but it's more difficult when it's the older ones because they shift around a lot on streaming. Yeah, and I've been updating I just redid all of the Letterboxd list. Go to Letterboxd. I gotta double check. I put a link tree on the Twitter and on the Instagram. So I think if you click on that, there should be a link to the list on Letterboxd that should show you all that stuff. Yeah, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you again next week.